me to jump in? So the what we're going to do in the next really bunch of slides is to try to take the rules that we're talking about here and break them down into some relatively simple components, and hopefully we'll kind of achieve that in the sense that what is otherwise conceptually maybe a little bit complicated, once you see how it can apply, it's not quite as scary. The one thing that I'll say before I sort of start jumping through these things is, if you go back 10 or 15 years, probably more like 15, in my practice, I saw a lot of universities that were scared of financing research facilities with tax-exempt bonds. Some of that had to do with the uncertainty in the law at the time. Some of that just had to do with kind of uncertainty about how the facilities were going to be used, or just, you know, any number of things. And so there was sort of a, we're going to run away from that. We're either going to not finance those, or we're going to finance them with taxable bonds instead of tax-exempt bonds. And one of the things that has happened is that we have this revenue procedure. It may not answer all the questions, but it gives us actually a framework to think about how to make this fit together. Because as Ed was saying, research is a little bit odd. It's not the physical presence of some private company that's there, you know, leasing space in a bond-financed university building. It's university people doing university research, but maybe that intellectual property that's going to be created from the research gives rise to our kind of tax issues. Exactly. So as we sort of step through this, we've kind of broken this down into almost like a decision tree kind of thing. So the first point is, you know, will you have research conducted in bond finance space? Pretty straightforward question. If the answer is no, you know, this topic's over. If the answer is yes, we kind of move on. The part that's buried in this question, though, is knowing where your bond proceeds are spent and having an internal program that allows, you know, you or whoever the people are that are involved in the compliance part of it to actually be able to say, oh, here's where our bond proceeds really are. Exactly. You know, and if you think about that, it can't just be something that you're just sort of remembering, because you've got buildings that have been there for 100 years, or, you know, you're going to have new ones, you're going to be improving them, that kind of stuff. So you just have to have some way of tracking where your bond proceeds are. So we get to the second question. I guess we've said, okay, well, maybe we have some bond finance facilities that that may have research. So the next question, and again, this is sort of outside, this is kind of preliminary. If you're a 501c3 entity as opposed to a government public university, the question then becomes, is that research activity related to your charitable purpose? One of the things that does come into play here, and it's outside of this research area, it's a much broader rule, any activity that's an unrelated trade or business activity, whether or not you have taxable income from it, any activity that's an unrelated activity is treated as private use. So that's, and it needs to be kind of tracked. So that's one of the things here. Not really an issue for governmental universities, for state colleges and universities, even if you have to pay unrelated trade or business income tax as a, you know, state university, that does not translate to private use in this particular context. It's sort of a weird twist in the way the rules work.
That's right. I think more often than not, we always find that the research that C3s undertake is related.
Yeah.
So
it should be.
But it's just, again, part of the checklist, and right, just to make sure that it's in the sweet spot.
Right. So then what we sort of split it out, because the rules really are a little bit different for governmental entities and for 501c3 entities. So here we've got a slide on the 501c3 side. So then we say, okay, great. We've got this research. It's in a building that's bond financed. It's part of our mission. You know, kind of now what? And the focus then actually is not so much like what is the research or what's happening to it. It's just who's sponsoring it. So you know, if the sponsor is a state or local government agency, we don't see a lot of that. But you know, I'm from California. I helped write the stem cell initiative that went into play there, and there was $3 billion of research that was given out to largely nonprofits, a lot of UC stuff, so governments too, for research. So that was all sponsored research from the state of California. I think Texas had maybe a $2 billion cancer research initiative that was kind of like that. So we see a little bit of that. But if it's state and local government, you're good. The state and local government entities are never private users in this context, so we just don't have to worry about them. If you're a 501c3 and you're getting that grant from another 501c3 organization, and you kind of work your way through the relatedness of that, the no unrelated trade or business, again, you're just kind of good to go. Because even if the contractual relationship is such that it could create private use, the user is a good user. The user is a government agency or a state or local government agency or a nonprofit. But then what if we end up having a private party or the federal government? That's really where we now get to it. We've got bond finance space. We're doing research there. The research is the funding for the research is coming in from private corporation or from the federal government. Just to take a step back here, it may seem kind of odd that the federal government is treated like a private corporation. That's just the way the rules work.